Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 210. We're going to talk about 10 weird van life thoughts. I promise you, I have not been inhaling any smoking weeds, but you might think that I have. We're also going to talk about Clean Tank, a way to keep your black tank smelling lovely. A tale from the road involving leeches. And a place to visit that's like going back in time, maybe 50, 60 years. But, you know, every once in a while, that's kind of a nice thing to do. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me once again. I spend a lot of time thinking in my van. I will just sit in my van and stare at the many dials and gadgets and things that I wish to fix in the future, because there's many of those. And I have thoughts. And this week, as something a little bit different, I thought I would share some of those thoughts with you. Now, this is either going to be your favorite episode ever, or perhaps your least favorite episode ever, but it is going to be an episode. So let's dive right in here. One thought I had, we'll just number these. This will be number one. A thought I've had while laying in my van is that I'm resting in the air. I'm being held up by only tires, and there's only a few square inches of rubber connecting the van to the ground. I mean, this is an important thing to consider when you're going down the highway at 70 miles an hour, is that that entire van that might weigh 8,000 pounds is only touching the earth on four or maybe six points of little bits of rubber, and that's it. And when I'm laying there unable to sleep at 3 a.m., that's one of the thoughts I have. Number two, similar thought, I'm sleeping over explosives or flammable liquid. If I'm in a van that is powered by gasoline, I am conscious of the fact that my tank holds maybe 20 gallons of gas, and that each gallon of gas has the explosive power of 14 sticks of dynamite. That's 280 sticks of dynamite that I could be sleeping over if my tank is full. Now, I also know that it's quite safe. And this is something everybody driving a vehicle does. I'm also aware that if I'm in my Sprinter van, which is diesel, it isn't like that because diesel doesn't explode. It just burns. But yeah, sometimes I think of this when people are all concerned about, oh no, if I have propane in the van. And well, yeah, propane can be dangerous, but consider what else is already there. Number three, as I lay in my bed from IKEA that I custom fabricated into my van, I have more luxuries at hand than any king or queen of the 19th century. I have the sum of all human knowledge in my hand, which would be my cell phone. I have electricity. I have fans. I have heat. I have everything I need in this one little space. And while it may not be lavish, I might not be wearing a leopard skin robe with little mink tails all tied into it or anything like that, and I might not have 100 people waiting on me hand and foot, I do have things that no king or queen of the 19th century could have even imagined, never mind owned. So take that, monarchs. Number four, clean has a very different definition when I'm out doing van life. Is a shirt clean? Whereas at home, if I've worn a shirt once or twice, it's not clean. In the van, clean is just an assumed state until something tells you it's not clean. It's a little bit of a different standard, and I attribute that simply to the fact that it's a lot more work to clean a shirt in a van than it is at home. But this clean idea kind of extends. You will eat on a picnic table that if it were in your house, you would think was filthy. You won't bathe as often. Even at home, you might feel like, oh, I really need a shower. But somehow when you're camping, rinsing your hair off is like a whole shower. It changes the way you think about such things. And you are actually saving resources with this new attitude. So I think it's a good thing. Number five. Over time, as you drive your van, you are collecting minute particles of everywhere you've been. And in fact, minute particles of everybody who's been in your van. Microscopically, At a molecular level, your van becomes a record of everywhere you've gone. Everything you've eaten, everyone you've met, all of that is recorded inside your van in the forms of dust, sand, pollen, etc. I have no idea what good that information is, but that's what I think of. Number 6, just as with the cleanliness thing, how you use the bathroom changes. I have noticed this, and I've heard other people mention this. The number of times they need to use the bathroom changes substantially when they're in the van, because going to the bathroom in the van has a higher cost than it does in a home or in a building. A home or in a building, you have a toilet, you do what you're going to do, you flush that toilet, and that's the end of it. In a van, if you don't have access to a toilet necessarily, or you're using one in your van, well, that's just part of van life. It's not the end of it. Anything that you flush, you will deal with again in one way or another. And that actually seems to change how your body signals you that it's time to go to those places. I'm curious to see if anyone else has noticed this. But for me, absolutely. When I'm out camping, when I'm out in the van, my schedule changes. Number 7. Easily have 3 25-hour days in a row if you travel west. No, seriously, if you get in your van in, say, Virginia, wherever, it doesn't matter, somewhere on the East Coast, and you start driving west, as long as you cross a time zone every day, you will have 25-hour days. You will have an hour that repeats itself. So you can experience 75 hours in 3 days, whereas most of us will only experience 72. Or you can do it in reverse. You know, you don't like these days. If you want the days to be shorter, you can start in California and go east, and you'll have 3 23-hour days. Weird, but true. Number 8. When you're in your van and you look around at everything, at least a thought that I have fairly frequently is, I have more than I need. There's more stuff in my van than I actually need, even though there's a lot less stuff in my van than there is in my condo. I've got tons more stuff in my condo. I've got more dishes, more plates, more clothes, more towels, more furniture, more space. I have all that in my condo. And yet in the van is when I'm consciously aware that I actually have more than I need. Really interesting perspective, and I think that's one of the big appeals of van life, is that change of perspective. Number 9, I think this is true not only of van life, but perhaps all camping. Food tastes better. I will eat food that I have made in my van that I would never cook for myself at home. It doesn't taste the same. It's not as appealing. There's something about being out on the road or out in the woods that makes very simple dishes taste really, really good. And I think that's great. And number 10, this one is for philosophers and astrophysicists. Driving your van over the world, over the surface of the globe, isn't substantially different from rotating the universe under your van. Mathematically, it works out to be the same. So we may perceive ourselves as driving, like rolling over the surface of the globe. But imagine that the van is actually stationary, and that when you turn the wheels, it makes the globe roll under the van, and that makes the entire universe around it rotate in the same way. It's a very visual thing, but from what I'm told, mathematically, there's no difference, because in the universe, any fixed point is relative. You just get to pick one, and it doesn't matter which one. So you could pick your van, and then everything else works out mathematically. No, I swear, I have not been drinking anything other than cherry juice, and I have not been imbibing any cannabinoids. But yet, these were the things I was thinking about the last time I was laying in bed at 3 a.m., and, well, now I've shared those thoughts with you. And if you have any weird thoughts along these lines, I would love to hear about them. You can get in touch with me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. A big thank you to Dave and all the recurring donors who buy me gallons of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. You folks make it possible for this podcast to exist without any advertising, and that is a very, very good thing. So thank you all. Van Life News. Folks, we have a new winner. We have a new champion. We have a new tallest van. That's right. Ford Transit no longer holds the title of the tallest van. The new tallest van is the ProMaster Super High Roof. That's right. In 2024, ProMaster started making an extra tall roof. And I just found out about this. It's probably not new news, but hey, I found out about it. So it was news to me. And this thing's really tall. ProMasters were already the widest vans. Now they're also the tallest. In fact, if you get the extended length ProMaster with the super high roof, that's the biggest thing you're going to be doing in van life without any custom sheet metal work. Inside the ProMaster super high roof is 86 inches. It's 86 inches, 7 feet plus in there. So if you're a tall person and you wanted to do van life, but you didn't want to have to crouch over, ProMaster has a van for you. Now, there's a caveat here. It's only available in the 3500s insofar as I can see. So it's going to be a larger van, a larger build. I think they have 6 wheels. So it's also a little bit more expensive, but it's doable. Without cutting the roof off, you can now have 7 feet interior without any trouble at all. Plus, you still get the 8 feet wide. So, yeah, sorry, Transit, you always were the superlative for interior height in vans, but you have been knocked off the shelf. I'll have a link in the show notes to specifically what I'm talking about, but it wouldn't be hard to Google. Is the Citan coming to the U.S.? There is a rumor that Mercedes-Benz is about to release the Mercedes-Benz Citan, that's C-I-T-A-N, to the U.S. market. What is a Mercedes-Benz Citan, you might ask? Well, you remember the Metris, which is known as the Vito in Europe. They stopped making those for the U.S. market a couple years ago. Well, the Citan is much smaller. It's more like a ProMaster City or an NV200 or a Transit Connect. That's right, folks. It's a compact van. And Mercedes is apparently thinking about bringing it to the U.S. market, where it will be the only compact van available in U.S. So I'm excited about that. I'm a little disappointed it's a Mercedes because they have a terrible track record when it comes to cost per mile. They are by far the most expensive vans that you can have. But heck, if they're successful, maybe some of the others will say, hey, maybe we need to bring those vans back, because I certainly think we do. Link in the show notes. Also, curious thing, I reported on this a while ago. 2026 is supposed to be the last year for the GM vans, like the big vans, like the Savannah and the Express, the old-fashioned, the last of the U.S. big van. They're supposed to go away, and GM was going to replace them with what we were told was an all-electric van based on the Brightside platform. According to GMA authority, not so much. GM is reconsidering this because in the U.S., electric vehicle sales did not go as planned. Everyone thought that every year more and more EVs would be sold and everyone do more and more EV stuff. The government is pushing us in that way. There's all kinds of incentives. But what we're finding is that EV sales are down. EV prices are down. Tesla's had all kinds of issues and up and down. I mean, if you've been following Tesla at all, they're all over the place. They're supposedly going to release a much cheaper vehicle, which has saved their stock price for now. We shall see. But what this means for GM is we don't know what the future holds. You can still buy Express and Savannah vans now. They did not offer any discounts this year. Usually they have some kind of a promo, and they did not offer that this year. And we don't know. So stay tuned. Either GM is going to exit the van market completely, they're going to extend the Express, or they're going to come up with something totally new. There was a suggestion that GM might be going to brand somebody else's van as General Motors, as they did with the NV200. If you remember, the Chevrolet City Express was really just a rebranded NV200. There's some thought that they might do that for a while, which is not an uncommon thing when a car maker has a big hole. Honda did this with the Honda Passport. It was actually made by Isuzu when they first came out. Anyway, too much detail, but I'll have a link in the show notes. If you were hoping for that new GM van, I think you're going to have to wait a little bit longer. Product review. Cassette toilets and black tanks have the same problem, is that you have this holding tank for waste, and, well, it can smell bad over time, or even not much time. Composting toilets don't have this problem because they separate the solids from the liquids, and for some reason, that really brings the smell down. So, for those of us with cassette toilets or actual black tanks, I have noticed that the pods and the liquids that you get, the RV treatment stuff that you get at any of the camping supply stores, doesn't really work that well. In the old days, back when I had my 77 Chinook, we used to buy this blue stuff that was actually mostly formaldehyde. That stuff worked. This new stuff that doesn't have formaldehyde just doesn't seem to do anything. So I was doing some research on this, and often on trips, if I'm doing kind of a trip in civilization, I actually won't treat the tank in my cassette toilet at all. I'll just empty it frequently. But I thought, well, if I'm going to do one of these really long trips, like, for example, I'm going up to Colorado where I won't have too many services, wouldn't it be nice to have a chemical that actually worked? And there is a company called Kleen Tank. That's Kleentank. And they're actually a company that will come to your RV and empty out the tanks. So that's their main business. But they have the same problem. You know, they don't want to deal with the stinky stuff either. And they certainly don't want to deal with the stuff that's gone septic, meaning that the waste has started to break down. And you end up not with this watery substance. You end up with this, like, liquid clay slurry that causes all kinds of problems. So they did some experiments with chemistry and came up with a solution to this. And I have been trying it. And, you know, I like it. I think this stuff is great. So what you're doing is you're mixing Calgon ageless bath pearls. These are little pearls that you would throw in the bath to give you a nice bubble bath kind of a thing. And then Pine Sol. And you mix those together, and then you take a tiny portion of that and add it to the tank. And that's it. So I'll give you the formula here. I'll also have a link in the show notes. But you take 8 ounces of Calgon Ageless Bath Pearls. That's what it's called, Calgon Ageless Bath Pearls. I got mine on Amazon. And 40 ounces of Pine Sol. 40 ounces is the normal size bottle of Pine Sol, so you just pour the whole bottle in. Pour both of those things into a 1-gallon jug. Then fill that jug completely to the top with water and shake it up. And it'll foam up. That's normal. It's supposed to foam up. But, you know, let it foam up and then let it sit for a little bit. And then, depending on the size of your tank or how hot it is, add either 4 or 8 ounces into your tank every time you clean it. So you end up with a gallon of this stuff, but you're only using 4 to 8 ounces at a time. First thing I can tell you right away is this is by far the cheapest thing to do other than not treating it at all. Second, it seems to work really well. You've got the Pine Sol for deodorizing, and it's pretty powerful deodorizer. Now, if you hate the scent of Pine Sol, you could try to get a different scented Pine Sol. But I find, my personal nasal experience here, is that the Calgon and the Pine Sol, they're both very scented. They mix and produce kind of a nice scent. So I didn't have a problem there. You might be thinking, well, what the heck are the bath pearls for? They're not just for scent. It turns out that Calgon, remember that name Calgon, ageless bath pearls are a water softener. That's what Calgon does. Calgon makes water softeners. And if you add water softeners to your bath, it makes your skin feel soft. Well, if you add it to your black tank or your cassette toilet, it makes things less sticky. It makes all that stuff not stick to sensors or to the sides of the tank, and it makes it come out easier. So this stuff really seems to work, and there's tons of followers who swear by it, and the people whose business it is to empty tanks recommend this, and they don't make any money off of this. It's not like they came up with this and sold it as their super-duper solution, only $25 a gallon. No, they just shared the recipe with you, hoping that you would use it so they have an easier time emptying your tanks. I will have a link in the show notes to the recipe and the whole philosophy behind it. It's cleantank.com, K-L-E-E-N, tank.com, and I have really liked it so far. Tech Talk. Hey, let's talk about conduit. Doesn't that sound exciting? So I have the Scamp, right? A Scamp is a small fiberglass trailer, and just starting to renovate this thing. And I want to put in a powered fan on the roof. Right now, it has a very large vent in the roof that's big enough to crawl out. It's actually like a safety hatch, but doesn't have a fan in it. And I really like having a fan up there. I mean, I love my Max Air fan. It does wonders for me. So I want to add one to the Scamp. Problem is that the way a fiberglass trailer is constructed, it's basically just a layer of fiberglass and then something like Reflectix. I'm not really sure what they used. And then the stuff they called rat fur, which is this kind of flexible fabric-y stuff, is on top of that. And that's it. There's no place to run cables. So how do I get the power up to the fan? And I haven't done this yet, but what I think I'm going to do and what I want to pass along to you as a Tech Talk tip is that I think I'm going to use conduit. Conduit is a very good thing. Now, a lot of people don't like the way it looks because you can see the conduit, but it doesn't really bother me that much. There's many different kinds of conduit, and some of the conduit you can get, specifically the kind you can get for your home theater, the kind that's meant to hide the wires between your TV and your DVD player, if you still have one of those things, those are very nice, and that's what I ended up using in my NV200 when I couldn't get a wire to run where I wanted it to. And the concept is very simple. You have this long piece of plastic that's sticky on one side, and then it opens up. And you run your wires in this and close it up, and then they're invisible. And you can buy them as a kit that comes with a bunch of elbows and connectors and things like that. And what you're left with is you don't see any wires, but you do see this strip of plastic. I don't think that's going to be a bad thing. And one advantage conduit has over running wires in your wall is that you can change them. Need a bigger wire? No problem. Want to add another wire? No problem at all. Trying to troubleshoot a problem? Open up that conduit and see how the wire is. It's much easier. I mean, honestly, I kind of feel like everything should be in conduit in your van. You shouldn't run anything behind the walls, just from a maintenance standpoint. I know on ships, like big cruise ships, that's basically how it is, and a lot of office buildings are like this too. The wiring is run inside these conduits that they can get at. In fact, in Chicago, that's the code. You're not allowed to use just wire. You have to run everything in conduit, and once you open the access point, you can replace all the wire and everything. Anyway, just want you to have this thought that while you're building out your van, if you have a difficult place to run a wire, consider running some conduit. You can make it somewhat attractive. You can paint it. You can even wrap it in wallpaper if you want. You can do whatever you want with it. But I don't think it's ugly as some other people do. And it does have a lot of advantages. If I do end up doing this in the Scamp, I promise I will share with you a video or something so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Tales from the Road. Well, folks, the BSA is no more. That is, the Boy Scouts of America has changed their name to Scouting America because it's not for boys only anymore. They also let girls in now, which they have in different capacities. But now they have a full program for boys and girls. And I have a lot to say about Boy Scouts versus Girl Scouts, but I will leave that aside from a campfire sometime. I have been both a Boy Scout and a Girl Scout, so I know of whence I speak. But I spent a lot more time in the Boy Scouts. I used to work at summer camp. I basically spent every waking moment doing Boy Scouts between the time I was 13 and 18. Boy Scouts was my whole life. And I would go and spend the entire summer at Boy Scout camp, either as a camper or as a staff member. And there was this one strange part of this camp. Now, if you're from New England, I was a camp counselor at Wild Goose Camp, which is in the Storer Reservation in Center Barnstead, New Hampshire. And that was a bunch of different Boy Scout councils use that camp. I was in North Bay Council, which was kind of the north of Boston area. But there were a lot of different councils there. And we would all go up there and do summer camp stuff. And not everybody went with their troop. You see, the normal way to do camping back then was the entire troop would go up the same week, act as a troop, and do all the stuff as a troop, and then go home. But some kids either couldn't do it that week, or their troop decided they weren't going that year, and they still wanted to go to camp. So what this campground did was they made a special troop just for individual kids. And it was called Provisional Camp, or Provo for short. That's what we ended up calling it, Provo. I loved Provo. Provo was really interesting because you got to be in a troop with kids you'd never met before. You got to make all these connections. Everyone had a different experience. I thought it was a great thing. But at this camp, where the provisional campground was a little odd. It was separated away from all the other campgrounds, and each troop had their own little campsite. Like, there was a Tombstone was a campsite, or Shawnee or Abnaki, usually stealing names from the Indians for all these campsites. Provo's campsite was called simply Provo, and it was by itself, closer to the administrative buildings, and it had its own beach. Now, if you know anything about the Boy Scouts, you should know that they take swimming safety very, very seriously. There's a main beach at just about every Boy Scout camp, and they have a buddy system where you're never allowed to swim by yourself. You always have a buddy, and each person's buddy is responsible for knowing where the other person is at all times. You have an in-and-out tag system where you have a tag that has colors on it that indicates your swimming level, and you put the tag on the board if you're in the water, and the moment you get out of the water, you take your tag off the board. I mean, seriously, they spend a lot of time trying to keep people safe at the beach. And then there was our beach, which was affectionately named Leech Beach. And we were told this was named after somebody named Leech. In fact, we had a camp counselor named Mike Leech, and there was some joke that the beach was named after him. But I don't believe it. I think it was named Leech Beach because, in fact, from time to time, you could find leeches there, which is not an unusual thing in any New England lake. In fact, what you're finding are medicinal leeches that people released on purpose because leeches used to be good medicine, and may still be, depending on your perspective. Anyway, this beach was kind of a free-for-all. We didn't use the buddy board. We just did whatever the heck we wanted. We completely flaunted all the Boy Scout rules and just went wild. It was crazy and dumb. Honestly, I don't understand how this happened. I mean, you know, when I was there as a 17-year-old, I didn't care that much. But now as an adult, I'm like, what is the point of having this highly controlled waterfront area where we have this other beach that kids just do whatever the heck they want? No buddies, no lifeguards, no board. And this water was fairly creepy. It was actually in a different body of water than the main waterfront. The main waterfront was on Adams Pond. This waterfront was actually on Wild Goose Pond. And I only mention all these names in case somebody happens to be familiar with the area. Anyway, in the spirit of doing whatever the heck we wanted, one day towards the end of camp, we're kind of taking things down. And in fact, I was a staff member at this point. Most of the kids had gone home, and we were starting to dismantle things. We're starting to take down the tents. And one of the things we had to take in was the floating raft. If you've ever read the Stephen King book or seen the movie The Raft, it was a little piece of another movie like Creepshow or something like that, but it's that raft. This was a floating raft out in the middle of the lake or the pond all by itself, and you had to swim to it. And it was fairly creepy. Now, I am not somebody who's terribly comfortable swimming. I've never been a good swimmer, and I have kind of an inherent fear of deep, dark water. But for whatever reason, I was the one who had to go and bring the raft in. So, how do you do this? Well, you swim out to the raft, and you release it from the anchors, which are basically just cinder blocks with a little floaty part at the top that you tie onto. And then you jump out and swim with the raft and push it to shore. Simple, right? Not so simple. A little creepy for me, but what the heck, I'm going to do it. Then I had a thought. what if I could just kind of Tom Sawyer it? You know, what if I could swim out to the raft and bring like a paddle with me and then paddle to shore instead of swimming to shore? Side note, part of the reason I was particularly scared of this body of water because of an experience I had there, and I may have told the story on here before, but one day, weeks earlier, when we were out swimming with all the kids, somebody swam underwater and grabbed my leg and tried to pull me down. Ah, stupid kids, whatever. They weren't serious about it. I was larger than most of the kids anyway, so it wasn't like I was in any danger or anything like that. But still, it was annoying. And I whirled around to see who it was and realized that I was too far away from any of the kids for it to be one of them. And I could see all of them. There were six of us. I could see five other kids and myself, all of whom were 30 or 40 feet away. There was nobody who could have grabbed my leg. Creepy! Makes you think of, like, Friday the 13th and stuff like that. Minutes later, maybe 100 feet away, we heard this. It was a beaver slapping its tail. So, either Jason was under there grabbing me and pulling me down, or it was the beaver. I don't know. I don't have any other explanation. But it was creepy, and it made me not want to get back in that water, especially by myself. And that's what my job was. So that's where it came from. That's why I wanted the paddle. So there weren't any paddles. The canoe area was completely far away. There weren't any paddles where I was, so I actually made one. Just out of some scrap wood, I lashed a flat piece of wood to a log, because lashing was a big thing. Everything was done with ropes. And swam out with it, unhooked the raft, and started to paddle to shore. And then I thought, well, why not explore a bit first? You know, I'm out there all by myself on this lake, pond, with a raft and a paddle. So rather than go right back to shore, I just start paddling around a bit, not very quickly, and actually in a circle, because if you have one paddle on a big square raft, you will find that it's very difficult to go in a straight line. So you kind of have to keep up with the rotation and try to get it to go into your direction. And I did, and I explored a bit. It was a bright sunny day, and I could see through the water. And what I saw, for some reason, really disturbed me. Because what was in the lake was boulders. Boulders the size of houses. Massive, enormous boulders. Just like unfathomably large boulders. And that's what I was rafting over. I can't get the image of this out of my head, and I don't understand why it bothered me so much. I mean, again, this is central New Hampshire, the Granite State. Boulders are not an uncommon thing. But these things were so large, and they were looming just below the surface, that I decided my exploration was over, and as efficiently as I possibly could, I paddled to shore and got some help, and we pulled the dock ashore. And that was it. In fact, that was the very last time I ever went into the water at Leech Beach. Now, I don't know what Boy Scout camp is like, co-ed Boy Scout camp. I think it could be a good thing. I cannot imagine, though, Boy Scouts today having an experience like that with an unregulated beach and being able to do things like that. It's amazing we all survived it, but somehow we did. But some of those images have survived a little too long, and I still find them creepy. A place to visit. You know what's fun? If you have a bunch of people and you go to the drive-in. Not the drive-in like Sonic, the drive-in movie theater. And I understand, you know, this is like a thing of the olden days. Even when I was a kid, it was a thing of the olden days. I mean, I remember I saw the Poseidon Adventure, and it was a double feature. The Poseidon Adventure, the original, and Burnt Offerings, another thing that has haunted me my whole life, I saw as a little kid in the backseat of my parents' Pontiac. I think it was a 68 Pontiac. I still remember that. And while drive-ins are mostly gone, there is still a drive-in that's going strong, and it's in a really cool place. And if you're ever there on a summer evening, I think you could have a wonderful nostalgic night, or if not nostalgic, time-traveling night, by visiting the Wellfleet Drive-In in Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Now, Wellfleet is on Cape Cod. If you curl your arm so that it looks like Cape Cod, it's halfway between your hand and your elbow. It takes some work to get out there, but it's near a lot of cool stuff like Cape Cod National Seashore. It's an absolutely beautiful area, quintessential Cape Cod, and it gives you some Jaws vibes because it looks like Martha's Vineyard, which is not that far away except over the water. Wellfleet Drive-In Theater, that's theater with an R-E, not an E-R, has been in business since 1957. It's one of only maybe 300 left in the country where there used to be thousands. It's scheduled to open this year on May 17th, and it has the whole package. You've got the old-fashioned sign, you've got four different screens, the sound is played over the radio in your car, you just tune to 89.5 FM, which seems to be the same frequency they all use. And you sit in your van and you watch the movie with your own sound system. And heck, if you've got a camper van, you can literally park backwards, open the back doors, make your own popcorn in the van if you want, and watch whatever movie they're showing. And they're usually fairly close to first-run movies. They also have a miniature golf course. There's a play field where kids play frisbee and stuff. There's an arcade and an enormous snack bar. And it's just kind of an old, fun Americana thing that I would like to be able to do again. And there is actually a movie theater on Route 66 in Illinois. Maybe I'll do them some other time. But this time I wanted to focus on this Wellfleet movie theater because it's in such a beautiful part of the country anyway that I think it would be a lot of fun. Now, Wellfleet is not a great place for boondocking. It'd be difficult to find a place to park out there. You might be able to check iOverlander and all those things, but there are campgrounds in the area, so you could do that. If you're wondering how much it costs, they actually charge per person. It used to be that most drive-ins charged per car, but now they charge per person. It's $15 a person, which to me seems like an awful lot for a drive-in, but there's so few left, and this is such a nice one that I think it's probably worth it. They have bathrooms, they have food, they have all the stuff. You can buy tickets ahead of time. And weirdly, and this is an important thing to note, drive-ins are open in the rain. And because it's raining, the screen is actually clearer. The rain takes the humidity out of the air. It makes less stuff in the air between you and the screen. And the screen actually looks cleaner and brighter. And it looks nice. So why not check it out if you're in that area? If you're doing Cape Cod, a night at the drive-in could be just the thing. So I'll have a link in the show notes, but it's Wellfleet, that's Wellfleet, cinemas.com. And you will, they actually have a few different ones, but you will find the drive-in theater. That's the one you want. Resource recommendation. I have been looking for hacks lately, like Airstream hacks and Scamp hacks and Van Life hacks, and it seems that the place where they are all congregating isn't eBay, isn't Facebook Marketplace, that's for sure. No, it's Etsy. If you remember, Etsy was this website that people would make their crafty stuff and sell, and well, there's all kinds of controversy now because people have abused it, and Etsy hasn't really supported the creators the way they should and all that stuff. Well, it is still a great place to find very specific things for your vans. Like, you can go in there and type ProMaster Van Hack, and it will come up with all kinds of little custom-made things just for your ProMaster. Like little tables that fit between the sliding door and the seats, or little plastic printed things that you didn't know you needed that solve that problem you didn't know you had. There's all kinds of things on there. One thing I just saw that is only going to be useful for people in trailers is this plug that somebody is making that you plug into your trailer wiring. Now, this is only true if you have a 7-pin trailer. It won't work on a 4-pin trailer. But on a 7-pin trailer, you plug this thing in and it will make the trailer lights go on only when it's dark out. So all your marker lights and your tail lights, they will turn on at night just to make things glow pretty and then turn off during the daytime using the battery in the trailer. Very simple piece of circuitry and a 3D printed housing, but what a great idea. What a neat thing to get. And I could totally see why you would want that if you were staying at a campground or someplace where you just needed some extra light. not a great example for van life, but you get the point. There's lots of stuff like that where people are inventing their own solutions to problems and then selling them to you in small batches, whereas on Amazon, you'd have to be able to sell thousands of these things. The Etsy people can get away with selling a dozen or so. So don't be afraid to check out Etsy.com. No, this is not a sponsored thing. And type in your van and see what they can find. I bought a window cover for my Sprinter there that fits perfectly. Now, I have found other ones on Amazon that I like better, but still, I was able to find a really decent blue window cover that somebody custom sewed just for the side window in my Sprinter. And that kind of told me that there's some real value here in Etsy. So check it out. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 210. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. I've got a whole bunch of travel coming up this June, and I'm not sure what's going to become of it, but I will share some of my tales and tricks and tribulations with you as it happens. If you'd like to follow a little bit closer, you can find us on Facebook at Built to Go, a Facebook group, or on our Discord server, links at builttogo.com. Until next time. Remember the words of Frank Zappa, who said, "I never set out to be weird. It was always other people who called me weird."